Lynn Thompson here on Living on Purpose with John Heaney. Hi, John.
Hello there.
Calling yourself a spiritual mechanic.
Yes. I work with people in improving their place in life and changing their place in the game and relaxing. I use a lot of humor, a lot of case studies, love to empower people. And people kept asking me, what do you call this stuff? And what do you call yourself? And I couldn't think of anything. And one woman really pressed me really hard. She says, you got to, you know, this is the marketplace. You got to. I said, I don't have to think of anything. So finally, just to be a little persnickety, I said to her one day, I said, I've decided to call myself a gelogenic mucilogist. She said, what does that mean? I said, well, in modern times, we reach back to old, quote unquote, dead languages to create names of dinosaurs and all kinds of things. So gelogenic has its roots in Greek from the word laughter, and mucilogist, the base of that is the Latin word for paste. So I put things together in funny ways, and that's what I do. Here and there, I started to use that, and it was quite funny, but still people said, you know, there's got to be. So just to simplify things, life is made up of the physical, the stuff you can touch, and the stuff you can see, and the stuff you can move, and the stuff you can build. But it's also made up of the esoteric, that which you cannot see or necessarily feel, which would be thought and intent and dreams and atmosphere, and that's kind of the spiritual. And we bandy about the term spiritual in various contexts. So I also noticed that what I was doing with people in groups was I was fine-tuning the way that they carry themselves, and maybe a little bit of oil here or a filter change there to make their life easier. And so I just came up with the term spiritual mechanic and the work of spiritual mechanics, because it actually works with those two worlds in tandem in a complementary way. People came to me and said, your stuff is so fascinating and simple and love to hear the stories and apply this in real life, and you should have groups. It always starts with should with these people. So this delegation of about 10 people came to me and said, we've had a meeting and we have decided that you have to have groups and we want to come to your group and we're signing on and we'd like you to start with 10 consecutive evenings once a week for 10 weeks. And here we go. And we'll start at Tuesdays or Thursdays. And then they really enjoyed it. Said, well, I can't come Tuesday, so what about this? And so I said, well, what the heck, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And at the end of the 10 weeks, at the end of the last session, I said, so there you go. Is that enough? And they said, well, we've been talking about it, and we don't want you to stop. And that was well over 15 years ago.
Wow.
And people have entered my living room from all walks of life, from all continents. And I do ask if somebody new is going to come, you know, if you have a friend and you want to bring them, I say, you know, give them my number. I'd like to have a phone chat with them before they show up, just to show them the lay of the land and how we work and this kind of thing, so there are no surprises. But sometimes people, you know, the door opens and it's an individual I know with two people I don't know. And they say, my relatives are here from Germany and I can't stop talking about you, so they're coming to the evening. Come on in. And so you have to start from scratch. And I remember one time, actually, it was a fellow from Germany. He was here for a while and he came every evening and just loved it. Just loved it. And finally said, you know, I can't find this in Germany. How do we run this to Germany? And everybody in the room said, silly, start your own group. Because I'd been through a lot health-wise and professionally and so forth, and I had started noticing how people handle energy and the topics of their beliefs and their philosophies and their points of view. And I couldn't find a place where you could just come in, have coffee, put your feet up, start talking about stuff, share circumstances. And it wasn't all emergency and crisis, not therapy, right? So there you are. And that continues.
John, we're wanting to talk about this concept that I have really come to appreciate that you've shared, is about each of us having a crowd.
Yes, a little bit of childlike fun here, and maybe a little cartooning too. One of the things the most fascinating about human beings to me is when you meet somebody, a man or a woman on a bus, or a relative you've never met, or going to a party, meet somebody for the first time. Everybody on the planet is simultaneously unique and universal, which is really cool about human beings. No human being on the planet is the same, but we all have rooted, similar, universal needs and wants. And when you become fascinated about what people have been through, where they've traveled, who they've known, where they've studied, and I always remind people that there isn't anything that's ever happened to anybody that hasn't happened to somebody.
Yeah.
And it's so true. When events happen, like, you know, deep tragedies, like somebody losing all their family members in a fire, for example, you either read that in the paper and it happened in China, or you read it in the paper and it's across town, or it happened next door, or you are the survivor who is the sole survivor of the fire. We're all in these things, or next door to them, or across town from them. So trying to convey this also of the richness of people, just because somebody walks into the room, they could have not only a fabulous, fascinating background, but they could know the people you need to know. They could know the person who will be your next employer. They could save you time and money with knowing this and that and whatever, connection and so on. So how was I going to convey that just the physical person you see is only the tip of the iceberg of who they are, what they've been through, what they know, what they're all about? And in terms of interconnection, social interconnection, so if we take that. So I kind of took that. I said, you know, if this person had a crowd around them, if I could see everybody they know, if I could see all their relatives, if I could see all their former employers, if I could see all their deceased relatives, if I could see all their friends, that's quite a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, some people get into the esoteric and they make references to angels and guides and saints and animal totems and so on and so on. So why not add those to the mix? So then it's kind of interesting about extending the concept that if you had deceased relatives, let's say grandparents, and they'd known you your whole life, and they're still watching over you, and they're saying, well, there he goes again. We tried to tell him when he was young, but he didn't. So in terms of also the interest that this crowd has in you, I've even applied it to the concept of military post-traumatic stress disorder.
How so?
Buddies who have died alongside you in battle are part of your crowd. And in a couple of cases, the soldiers, the surviving soldiers, were in a tough place for a long, long time because they believed they were grieving their lost mates. But in fact, their lost mates were still around.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to take care of them. So you had a double whammy, double feedback kind of thing going on.
Almost like an echo.
Yes, yes. So when you just said in a very refreshing spiritual mechanic kind of way, hey, I got an interesting idea. What if this is true? And I first learned this from a British doctor who had survived the Japanese prisoner of war camps in the Second World War with his family, because he started to work with imagination, energy, and atmosphere. And he turned it into a game for his kids. So they had a different point of view, which helped their survival. When he returned to Britain, he became a psychiatrist, and he noticed that a lot of the therapy was problem-based, not kind of wide open. Right? He came across a case of this with a World War I veteran who was in a wheelchair in a veteran's home who had barely spoken since the First World War. And he came across this man, and because he'd been open in his wartime experience with energy, he noticed buddies of this man in spirit around him, and he started talking to the deceased and the guy in the wheelchair just perked up and started talking. And then he said the memory was, he came out of it, and he said the memory was being in a trench in the First World War, and a shell had gone off, and all his buddies had been decimated around him. And he got up off the wheelchair for the first time. And so then you take this idea, and you start to have fun with it. And you're saying, so you have a crowd of the living and the deceased, and even the memories of the people who are living, you know, your living parents and siblings. And you go out into the world with this, and you're basically traveling with a crowd, as everybody else is, right? But you are acknowledging you are, but you're also acknowledging that everybody else is. So you're also acknowledging as you carry yourself, there's far more to everybody I meet than I know. It basically enhances humility a lot. It basically says, you know, I really don't know who I'm totally talking with. So maybe being a little bit more courteous, etc., or careful or watchful. And then it keeps growing. And then it's not unknown for people to play with this. And then they turn a corner and a psychic meets them. And the psychic can notice that this is going on.
We've been talking about crowds and my crowd and your crowd and how these crowds can interact at a distance too, not just when you meet somebody in person, right?
Mm-hmm. I do say to people, once you start playing with this, things really start to develop and then take off. And I remember one time being at a kind of a cocktail party, and the young son of a friend of mine came up and started tugging my suit jacket. And he goes, "Mister, mister." And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You've got a whole crowd of people around you." So this is the feedback about that there could be some truth to this. And then, as I also developed in my repertoire, the phrase "ladies and gentlemen," which means that you're addressing all these people seen and unseen, and you start to not only acknowledge them, but work with them and play with them and show them things and so forth, and you just keep addressing them. So then it's like, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm off to the antique fair. I'd love to find something really, really cool," right? Or, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to take the train to Toronto in the middle of winter, in the middle of the Christmas season, with all kinds of tired, bored, and kerfuffled travelers. Watch what happens when we have some fun," right? So you keep applying it. But then the energy around you can hardly wait for you to do the next thing because they have some more fun. And then when you teach people this, and they're first, "Oh, this is silly. I mean, this is absolutely," because it's too simple. It's just too easy. It's just too easy. And then you just keep rolling the inclusion, and you kind of jokingly say to people, "Well, if you were a deceased relative and you were floating around some idiot who wasn't going to listen, you know, what you're doing with using this yourself now is you're helping yourself for your future. So when you're floating around, you have more fun."
It's an investment in your future.
It's an investment in your future. So the stories of how people have applied this, and of course, we have a culture that's very much into process. Process, process, process. How do I do this? And how often do I do this? And what time of day do I do this? And what direction on the compass should I face when I'm doing this? Everybody wants process and that kind of thing. I go, no, no. So people have said that they get a little panicky about a life situation. They've totally forgot about this. And then all of a sudden, in their head, somebody says, "Ladies and gentlemen," and it starts. Because everybody's starting to have fun and you're taking the process off. You are, as I say to people, changing your place in the game.
Further from the crowd concept, we have the idea of creating an atmosphere.
In the term that I use in my work as a spiritual mechanic, that is the thing about the physical aspect, the stuff you can hold, the mechanics of life, and the spiritual, which is the unseen and the esoteric, and you can talk about thought, intent, spirits, and so on. So to simplify things in one term, I use the term atmosphere. So the atmosphere is full of ideas, and the atmosphere is full of frenetic activity. So there's this relatively small city in Russia called Sochi, which a few years ago was quite a quiet place, and the atmosphere has changed slightly there in the preparation for the Winter Olympics. So the entire atmosphere has changed in Sochi. The entire atmosphere has changed in Russia. In world history, one of the biggest rumblings of instantly changing atmosphere was 9/11. All of a sudden, as a matter of fact, I've spoken with you about the groups I have, and for a while I had a daytime group that was quite well attended. And one of those meetings was on the morning of 9/11. And I was getting ready for the meeting, and the people started coming in, and they said I was on the car radio and turned on the TV, so we basically watched the whole thing happen, including the towers coming down. And talk about a tsunami of a change in atmosphere right across the continent, right across the world. So this happens in natural disasters, but it also happens at rock concerts. It also happens at Boxing Day shopping frenetic riots. And we all know. So somebody can say, oh, I don't believe in this atmosphere stuff. And then you say, have you ever been to different cities? And they go, oh, now I get it. Cities feel different,
mm-hmm.
right? So then it becomes, do we usually subconsciously, automatically, without thinking, create different atmospheres and contribute to them and the maintaining of them, right? And if this is true, what happens when more and more people consciously decide to work with the whole concept of atmosphere and consciously make a difference in the world using the same principles?
Mm-hmm.
Once you do that, then rolling into reputation, this adds another interesting aspect. What if, in a certain way, all life is seen? And biblically and religiously, there are references of Jesus, for one, talking about the ability of God to know exactly what's going on and you're taken care of as the lilies of the field. So what if that is true, that everything's going on right now? And so right now in the middle of Chicago, two men are planning a bank robbery, and we won't hear about the bank robbery until 2 days from now. Right now, a firm is going bankrupt, and you'll hear that in the news next week. Right now, somebody's planning a surprise birthday party. Right now, somebody is planning a divorce, and somebody's planning, how do I pop the question? So everything is going on anyway, and all this is contributing to changes in atmosphere. And some people plow through atmosphere. Yes, there's the worst snowstorm in the city's history, but I want to see that movie. So they literally plow through the atmosphere and get to the movie. We flow along, sometimes some say a little too much, with the flow of governance and that kind of thing, going against the current. But around the corner comes somebody applying spiritual mechanics and atmosphere and crowds and reputation, knowing that they're seen and knowing that they know they're seen, and deciding to work the world this way and saying to energy, come on over here and let's, when I take this trip, when I take this journey, when I go to university for the first time, when I'm out looking for a job, whatever I'm doing, I'm changing the atmosphere by walking into the office, the hospital, the train station, and making a difference and having a heck of a lot of fun.
John Heaney, Living on Purpose, Lynn here with a question for you. Are you ready?
I'm all set.
So I find myself in a situation where I once again, yet again, want to reach out and help someone who obviously needs help. However, I feel like I have reached out in so many ways over so many years and not feeling confident that it's really made a difference. And so I'm kind of at a loss. What do you suggest to someone in my position?
I remind people that it's really fun if you start with something fundamental, which is loving yourself. We're all surrounded by drama and situations. Daily, we come across things we hear of, or we have things happening in our family or at work. And one of the things I've noticed energetically that happens to people is we each have a part inside of us who wants to do something. And if you don't take care of that aspect of you, it will jump up and down and maybe have a tantrum until you end up doing something. And so how do you take care of that aspect of yourself so that it settles down and you feel you've done something? When you start to use our concept of the Ladies and Gentlemen Declaration and you basically know that you're seen, if the drama beside you is seen, so are you. And sometimes dramas continue because people forget that they're seen. They get wrapped up in the energy so much that they lose their ability to think, to choose, to lay back and look at situations, to be flexible, right? So they're just in these little tornadoes. And you've just walked past a tornado. And are you going to get sucked into the tornado? When you love yourself and you realize that you're seen and the tornado is seen, this drama that people put themselves through, you can even say, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all people who almost got sucked into a tornado, watch what happens as I walk by and appreciate I've just taken a walk by. And the fact I didn't do anything had an effect on the situation. Because bringing peace, right, which is a no thing, or a nothing to a lot of people, we forget that that has an effect.
You're right, because there's sort of this idea that you have to do something physically and visible and evident.
And take action.
And take action, yeah.
So when you appreciate that, that as soon as you acknowledge that that is taking an action and saying, look what I just did. Nothing happened because I walked by. All energy that you pick up. People feel the energy of a drama. Their tummies tighten, that kind of thing. But the reverse has to be true, that a drama picks you up. And why shouldn't it? And why couldn't it? If you're being affected by an atmosphere, it's being affected by you. And when you really love yourself, you can say, I've just walked past this and I have affected the drama just by being me, being here. And so in the bigger picture, I talk about the energy around people. So I talk about crowds and I talk about the unseen people around dramas. And one of the funny things when you get into this practice is you can address the unseen energy around a drama, which never gets addressed because people are in the tornadoes. So they look like a Bugs Bunny cartoon just fighting each other. And you walk by and you're looking at the bigger picture. And actually, when you do that, you've just done something. It also comes down to a fundamental social thing, which is we are taught from cradle to grave to cope with the world. So we're coping with being popular or being understood or being included or getting somewhere or achieving something. Or we're coping with people's reactions or we're coping with what might happen. So we're coping all the time. And we forget that our presence has an energy to it and that we actually have an effect. And we're not taught we have an effect. So if there's a little tornado of drama beside us and we're thinking about what should I do, in a way we have forgotten we're already having an effect. And when you settle down to that and you even begin to have fun with that, which is, what would this room in its entirety look like if the entire room was seen with me beside the tornado of drama, right? So you're looking at an even bigger picture. So rather than, you know, getting caught up in the tornado, you're looking at an even bigger picture and saying, what does it look like having me next to this drama and I'm just relaxing? And that is an effect. It's kind of getting to a subtlety, which is, how can you have a good time even though you're in the middle of something. I remember being in a town and I had to walk from my friend's house to my car down a street that was foreign to me. And it was the middle of a summer afternoon, and three neighbors on this street living in different houses were screaming at each other across the street about what somebody did to somebody's dog and what they think of somebody's wife, and the three of them just going at it. And I decided to do a ladies and gentlemen walking right down the middle of the street. It was a small street, so there was no danger in doing this. And I did the fun thing that I love to do, which just using my imagination, my energy body, I started flinging packages of energy into everybody's houses and thinking how tough it must be to be the next door neighbor to these people. And everything quietened down. And the dogs stopped barking, and the people went back into their houses. And that's what I mean about some people would say either, let's go down another street to get to the car, and some people would do that. They would actually walk further to avoid this.
Right.
Or they'd feel rattled, or they'd talk about it for weeks, or it would ruin their day, right? But you go down the middle of the street and you say, you're the luckiest street right now because I'm walking down the middle of it because I'm doing this. And you're literally doing something only in your imagination, and it's having an effect. So you've moved to, I might as well do something. And if I was living in the sense of becoming the person you'd love to meet, I was thinking about the neighbors and I was getting all this energy from the other houses, like, what would you like to live on this street with these three people doing this all the time? And so by throwing that relief energy into those houses, I was actually doing something. But it had an effect because one of the people on the street, which happened to be me, was doing that. So I wasn't, as some people are known to do, yelling at these people to shut up and getting embroiled.
Or judging them.
So you're accepting that it happens. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all streets where this happens. So you're accepting it goes on.
And ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all families who have dissonant members within them, you know, who have different opinions and frustrations with themselves, yes, and with one another.
Yes.
Watch what happens.
As I accept that this takes place and I come back home to my own center and realize that my presence has a huge effect and I can have fun using energy to show how this can be done. In a fun way, I'm known to say all the time, always work with energy and never work with people because people are too screwed up.
And energy just is happy to flow around.
Yes. And watch the circus.
And watch the circus watching you,
yes,
have fun.
Yes. You're getting it, Lynn.
Well, thank you, John Heaney.
Most welcome.